Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Out front next, ready to seize. The New York Attorney General moving to take Trump's properties unless he gets $500 million by Monday. Top real estate attorney who has sued Trump and won is out front. Plus, President Biden with a big-time fundraising lead over Trump, but it does not stop there. We're going to show you tonight just how far behind the Republicans are from the Democrats right now. And new video tonight showing hundreds of migrants rushing past razor wire at the southern border. This is incredible footage in the United States. What caused it? We're going to take you there live. Let's go out front. And good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, ready to seize. The New York Attorney General making a major move to take Trump's prized assets, filing paperwork in New York's Westchester County, which would allow her to take control of two of Trump's prized properties if she chooses. James at the ready to seize if Trump doesn't get the $464 million bond by Monday. Now, Westchester is just north of New York City. It has the location of one of Trump's private golf courses and his estate known as Seven Springs. Seven Springs is 50,000 square feet, just the structure, 60 rooms, 15 bedrooms, three pools, and a reported bowling alley. Just listen to Trump's son, Eric.
When we first bought the property in 96, I was about 12, 13 years old at the time, and really my brother and I, and you know, my father during the summers would always put us to work.
One of the things that makes this property so unique, really one of a kind, is 230 acres in Bedford, New York.
There's no piece of land in Westchester, government or otherwise, that's even close to that size.
I mean, we're one of the highest points in Westchester. We are the highest house in Westchester.
This property was key to James's case, and in 2014, it was valued at or below $30 million. But that, of course, is way short of a $464 million bond, which is why James may also need to seize properties in New York City, including Trump Tower itself, 40 Wall Street. We've talked about those. It's also why James has her eye on other Trump properties farther afield, like Trump's National Golf Club in Jupiter, Florida. James featured that club in her successful lawsuit against Trump. And it's one of Trump's self-described gems, 18-hole golf course designed by Jack Nicklaus. And the Jupiter complex is valuable right now to the Trump family. The Trump org office in Florida is there where Don Jr. and Eric work, and they both live in Jupiter. In fact, they're planning to build a 45,000-square-foot office complex there now at the Trump National Golf Club there. The price tag reportedly $12 to $15 million, according to the Palm Beach Post. The reporter who first broke that story, Alexandra Kluck, will be joining me in just a moment. The bottom line, though, is that this hour, Trump is posting on social media saying it is too expensive for him to meet that $464 million bond, posting in part, and I quote him, putting up money before an appeal is very expensive. And the emphasis is his, not mine, all caps on that. So expensive that he is begging his supporters to bail him out, sending out a fundraising message, slamming the judgment to them with a link to a website. That website is to donate money. And this is really worth emphasizing, because whatever you think about this judgment, fair or unfair, it is really hard to wrap your head around asking regular Americans to pay for this. Because Trump says he's a billionaire, and no matter what he is, he's got a lot of money. And his supporters, the ones that he's sending texts like that out to, asking to donate to pay his legal bills, are not. In fact, we wanted to look at the numbers. So here's what we did. We went back and looked at who voted in the first state that voted this year. That was, of course, Iowa. And in the Iowa caucuses, 63% of the people who voted for Trump made less than $50,000 a year. Less than $50,000 a year. And Trump has no problem asking these people to pay for his legal bills. Kara Scannell is out front live outside Trump Tower to begin our coverage. And Kara, is there any sign at all that Trump is going to meet Monday's deadline for the $464 million bond?
Erin, as of tonight, there is no indication that Donald Trump is any closer to posting a $500 million bond. He still has a few days to come up with the money, or if he gets lucky, the New York appeals court will say he can post a lower amount or not post any of it until this whole appeal is over. But meanwhile, the New York Attorney General is starting to take the initial steps to prepare to move forward and see some properties. As you mentioned, she's filed paperwork in Westchester County, where the family compound Seven Springs is and where Trump also has a golf course. She could also move to seize properties in New York. That's where this initial judgment was filed, including Trump Tower and Trump's triplex apartment on the top floors. She could also move to seize his planes or go after his bank accounts. You know, either way, whatever option plays out next, it's not going to be quick and easy. And Trump is expected to fight it all the way. Aaron.
All right, Kara, thank you very much. Outside Trump Tower, of course, one of those properties potentially on the list. Out front now, top real estate attorney Adam Lightman Bailey. He successfully sued Donald Trump for fraud over Trump's Soho Hotel. Adam, you and I have talked many times about that over the years. And here we are tonight. The attorney general, Letitia James, obviously won the case in New York, so she could go ahead with property seizures there on Monday if she wanted to. She's got a judgment in Westchester County, home to both Trump's Seven Springs estate and one of his golf courses, as I was showing everyone pictures of. What does this tell you about how quickly she is ready to seize Trump's properties?
The attorney general is ready to go. They're ready to go after his money to try to fulfill the judgment. The question is, how hard is it going to be to collect? And I will tell you straight up, it's going to be a very difficult collection process if they can't seize his liquid assets, which are the first thing I would do if I was the attorney and the litigator collecting assets is send the proper documents out to seize the bank accounts. I would send a notice to every bank account in the United States of America, every bank in the United States of America, letting them know that we have this judgment and we want to collect and see how much money you get. We know from the Trump 2021 tax return that he has at least $300 million in liquid assets. We know that he has more than that today. That's the first thing I would go after.
All right. So let me ask you, and you said in that filing, more than $300 million and more than that today in liquid assets. And he's testified, of course, he has $400 million in cash. Do you think James actually knows where he's keeping all that money? Or, I mean, what you're describing is sort of send it to every bank because it's a needle in a haystack. Is that really the way this is? Or do you think that she does know where those liquid assets are?
We know that she knows a lot because she's deposed him and everyone in the family so many times. So we know that she knows a lot. But that's not enough. And there's not that many banks left in the United States of America. And we know most likely they're planted in New York and Florida. Now, if they're in his name, they're very easy to get to. However, if they're in LLCs or in trusts, much harder. There'll be court battles over breaking up the LLCs, seeing who's in them. If the LLCs are not named in the loss in the judgment, you're going to have battles in court over who has rights to them, who's a member of them, who has a right to get to them. And what is Donald Trump trying to do? Two things. He's trying to keep his money, number one. And number two, if he doesn't post a bond by Monday. But number two, he's trying to get to November. If he wins the presidency, everything's on hold for 4 years.
So what do you think James should do first on Monday if Trump fails to meet the deadline? I mean, you know, obviously outside the liquid asset point, which you've made. But what does she do first in terms of property seizures?
Right. So she has a list of all his properties. She knows every property in the United States of America that he has. Unfortunately, most of those properties have mortgages on them. The banks, the lenders get paid first when she forecloses on them and she takes those assets. The lenders get paid first. Therefore, we don't know how much money is left on those assets after she forecloses on them. We know that a lot of those assets are overly inflated. That's something that Trump is very good at. As you and I have discussed in the past, and he's the king of. But what are they really worth, and how much? And remember what's going on in New York City today. We're in a real estate crisis and chaos. We've never had a commercial real estate market like this in the history of real estate. So it's the worst time to sell.
So you know Trump well because you have faced him in court a number of times, right? And you and I've talked about the Soho property where you were victorious about how much, you know, they said they'd sold more apartments than they had. You think that he could be getting desperate to come up with the money, I know, at this point. So who do you think he might be turning to get it?
Remember, there's campaign finance laws. So he should be turning to friends of his. He probably wants to stay away from Saudi Arabia and Egypt, where that's probably the easiest money to obtain. But he probably wants to find people he knows already, like an Elon Musk type, who we could do really great favors for, like banning imports of cars. In exchange, he takes a loan of that much money. I'm sure he's on the phone right now trying to get someone to loan him that much money or a portion of that money in order to avoid this whole fiasco.
Wow, it should be incredible to see a whole nother layer to this. Adam, thank you very much. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And I want to go out front now to Alexander Clow, the Palm Beach Post reporter who first broke that story that the Trump Org is building a new up to $15 million office complex at the Trump National Golf Club in Jupiter, even as Donald Trump says he doesn't have the money he needs by Monday's deadline. And beyond the Trump properties James is eyeing in New York, Trump's club in Jupiter could be important on this list for the attorney general. And Alexandra, you have been doing so much reporting on this particular property, and it's a significant one for a lot of reasons. Why do you think James may have her eyes on Jupiter?
Well, Aaron, Jupiter is Northern Palm Beach County. And during the pandemic, a number of Wall Street companies and private equity firms move their offices to West Palm Beach and Northern Palm Beach County. And a lot of executives want to live in Northern Palm Beach County because it has a lot of beautiful country club communities, golf communities.
And it looks like
have jumped about.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Yes, so I was just saying that a lot of companies moved to Palm Beach pandemic, and it looks like are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'll just give you one more try here. I know that it keeps freezing, but just to explain why you were saying, because a lot of businesses move there and people move there. So I guess that's that you just seen this incredible surge in asset values.
That's right. About double in the past few years.
Double in the past few years. So in the Trump Org fraud case, Alexander, James cited the Jupiter property as a major example of how Trump had fraudulently inflated the values of his properties. You know, he had said it was $62 million a year after he bought it for $5 million. And that was what, around 2012? That's 1,000% in 1 year. Okay, that sounds insane. Right. But then, subsequent to all of this, something that could affect James looking at trying to get to her value of $464 million by property seizures, something happened that made Jupiter one of the hottest and fastest growing markets in real estate. It's worth a lot of money now, right? Because of COVID.
Yes, exactly right. It's very hard to find that size of land, and there would probably be people lining up to buy that property if it became available for sale.
Wow, lining up to buy it. And you think lining up to buy it, and what we've seen some of these markets, I mean, even cash.
I couldn't say about cash, but there certainly are a lot of millionaires and billionaires. In fact, we say around here that the billionaires kick the millionaires off of Palm Beach, which is where Trump lives and has Mar-a-Lago, and it's only about 20 miles south of Jupiter. So there's a tremendous amount of money, a tremendous amount of financial firms, Wall Street firms, private equity firms, and family offices that now call Palm Beach County home.
All right. Alexandra, thank you very much for sharing your reporting with us. And next, we have some new reporting tonight that Fulton County DA Fani Willis is pushing to try Trump in August, taking no pause after the entire imbroglio with Nathan Wade, as New York's DA says no more delays there either. So will Trump actually get a verdict before the election? Plus, caught in the crossfire, new video showing terrified men, women, and children trapped inside a Gaza hospital. And this is happening while Israeli forces are targeting what they say are militants operating inside the medical complex. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, is my guest. And President Biden tonight opening up a sizable lead in the race for cash. So just how far behind is Trump? We're going to give you all the numbers.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Tonight, full steam ahead. CNN exclusively learning that the Fulton County DA, Fannie Willis, is not giving an inch on her schedule to start Trump's Georgia election trial. Sources telling CNN that Willis will re-up her request for an August 5th start date, not slipping at all. If she gets her way, that means a televised trial for Trump on his efforts to overturn the Georgia election while people are voting. Also today, the Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg says there is no reason for further delay in his criminal trial against Trump. So if he gets his way, that means that trial starts in less than a month. And it comes as the status of Trump's Mar-a-Lago classified documents case tonight is at a critical point. The Trump-appointed judge, Eileen Cannon, inexplicably not announcing a trial date. And raising eyebrows tonight with new directions just given to the prosecutors and Trump's team. Out front now, Ty Cobb, the former Trump White House lawyer. And Ty, I know that you have been focused on this new order by Judge Cannon this week. Tell me what stands out to you about it and why you think Jack Smith could actually have her removed from the case because of this order.
Yeah, this is a remarkable misunderstanding of the applicable law. It's embarrassing. She's been struggling so dramatically in this case ever since the start when she was she butchered the special master decision and the 11th Circuit took her to task for it. This is a totally baffling position. First, she appears to believe that the Presidential Records Act is actually consequential in the case, which it is not. This is an Espionage Act case. This is not a Presidential Records Violation Act case. This is the theory that Trump has the ability to designate classified material as personal records is absurd on its face. There is no legal support for that, but she has put Jack Smith in a position of trying to draft jury instructions in advance that would posit that question to the jury. I think that, it is such a fundamental error, and it is so reflective of bias that it does provide a basis, not a dispositive basis, but it does provide a basis for seeking her recusal. I know that former Massachusetts District Court Judge Nancy Gertner, who's very highly regarded by her colleagues and lawyers, had the same reaction that I had. And I saw some reporting today where she was suggesting that they seek to recuse her on this basis as well, pointing out that, she's just ignoring a raft of equally absurd motions as well, persistently delaying this case. A month ago, she ordered the identities of witnesses to be disclosed, and Jack right. Smith pointed out to her that was just not allowable. She has decided to, dismiss the vagueness challenge to the statute, but to the Espionage Act statute, but has suggested that, it might be something that would be addressed in jury instructions at a time where jeopardy would already have been attached and the government would have no remedy. It's really remarkable, some of the things that she's done that are just fundamentally unhinged.
So, I mean, you're using your words, I know precisely, right? Unhinged. And it gets to the point where I use the word inexplicable. Because it would seem that in any normal situation, you would be able to have a trial date set at this point, or you would have a judge able to do that. She has not done that. I know prosecutors have said they want to start on July 8th. Trump wants the entire case tossed out. What do you think is going to happen here? What is she doing? Is she going to announce a trial date that's real at any point?
I don't think, not that's real. She will announce a trial date at some point. Any other judge in the country would have long ago announced the trial date and then simply moved it. I don't think she has any intention of letting this case come to trial before the election or before the inauguration, which may not matter if Trump loses, because the case would ultimately get to trial. But if he wins, it's highly consequential because they'll have the ability to dismiss it. And to her credit, this is not the only case that she has made fundamental errors in. She recently butchered the public right to trial by excluding a defendant's family from jury selection. Now that case pled, so it won't be dealt with on appeal. But she just is, the wrong judge. I wish the chief judge of the district court there would step in, or the 11th Circuit would step in sua sponte, as we say, on their own
because
volition.
Who would decide if Smith makes a motion to have her removed? Who decides?
So that would be decided by the 11th Circuit.
All right. I have to say, to her credit, as the preface for what you said thereafter was a new use of credit.
To her credit, she could merely be incompetent.
All right, Ty Cobb, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, Aaron. Take care. Nice to be with you.
All right. And next, scared for their lives, thousands in Gaza are crammed into a hospital. Israeli forces are storming the complex, looking for what they claim are Palestinian militants. Plus, new videos showing migrants breaking through razor wire at the border. What actually happened here? We're going to take you to the scene live.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. Join me, Philip Nguyen, a scholar of Vietnamese-American culture, and the cast and crew as we discuss the making of this historic series. Subscribe now to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and stream HBO's The Sympathizer starting April 14th exclusively on Max.
Tonight, new video into CNN of the horrors inside Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza. Terrified civilians seeking safety there, now trapped as Israel lays siege for a fourth day. You see them here, in hallways, packed in, shoulder to shoulder. Israel claims Hamas is using the hospital still as a base for, quote, terrorist activity. It claims it's killed 140 of those terrorists. But innocent Palestinians are there, and they are caught in the crossfire. Jeremy Diamond is out front.
A crowded stairwell at Al-Shifa Hospital. Dozens of women and children await Israeli military instructions. For 4 days, thousands of civilians have been trapped here as the Israeli military raids the hospital, targeting Palestinian militants allegedly operating inside the medical complex. Soldiers are everywhere, the voice on the loudspeaker warns. If you leave the premises, the soldiers will shoot you. We have warned you. We have come here in order to get the Israeli hostages. Then we will let you go. Soon, word of evacuations begins to spread. Now they are forcing out the women, the voice behind the camera says. We don't know where they're going to take us. The Israeli military says they have killed more than 140 militants in and around the hospital. and detained these five men described as senior terror operatives, among more than 600 suspects the Israeli military says they've detained. Eyewitnesses say medical personnel and other civilians have also been rounded up. Outside the hospital, the fighting continues, as seen through the lens of Hamas militants, who have been targeting Israeli tanks and troops around the hospital complex. Israeli airstrikes reducing parts of the surrounding Al-Ramal neighborhood to rubble, sending thousands fleeing south. It's a journey marked by the sights and smells of death. We walked over the martyrs who are dead in the street. People are reduced to body parts, this woman cries. Where is the humanity? The newly displaced arrive on foot in central Gaza, carrying only backpacks and plastic bags, children clutching dolls and stuffed animals. Others, like this mother and her triplets, arrive with nothing at all. Tanks and artillery were firing at the buildings around Al-Shifa and forcing people to leave the buildings, she says. They make them leave with nothing on them, nothing, no pillow, no blanket, not even water. Nuzha isn't just fleeing the fighting, but the starvation that has left her eight-month-old babies thin and frail. You can see them, she says. Each of them is not even 2 kilos. 8 months old and not even 2 kilos. Anyone who sees them would think they are only 2 months old, and they are 8 months. It's a catastrophe. No water, no food, and siege and gunfire. But her journey is not over yet. She is heading further south in search of food and shelter, no longer taken for granted in Gaza.
And as civilians continue to flee the fighting in Gaza, negotiations are very much still ongoing to try and reach a deal that could see a weeks-long ceasefire and the release of dozens of Israeli hostages. Today, Secretary of State Antony Blinken saying that there are still gaps between the two sides, but that the gaps are beginning to narrow. He will head to Israel tomorrow to try and push for a deal. Meanwhile, the CIA director heading to Doha, Qatar, to meet with Israeli, Egyptian, and Qatari officials. So efforts on multiple fronts, Aaron, to try and reach a deal.
All right, Jeremy, thank you. And out front now, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, where the United States has for the first time drafted a new resolution calling for an immediate and sustained ceasefire in Gaza tied to the release of hostages. This after voting down 3 other ceasefire resolutions since the war began. So this is a significant development. And Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield, I appreciate your time tonight. This comes in the context of Israel in the fourth day of a siege of Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza. We understand thousands of people are said to be trapped there. And in the south of Gaza, Israel is preparing a major raid in Rafah. And I wanted to ask you about this because the top U.S. general in the Middle East today says that he is, quote, not aware of an Israeli plan to mitigate civilian harm there in Rafah. How can that be?
Look, the president has been clear. The secretary has been clear in his discussions with the Israelis that there has to be a plan to ensure the safety of civilians in Gaza. So I can't speak for the general that you spoke to, but I can say that we have a resolution currently on the table that references the situation in Gaza, particularly related to Rafah, and asks that the Israelis not take any actions there that does not provide for protection of civilians.
Have has your Israeli counterpart assured you that there is a plan, or do they even address it directly?
I mean, my counterpart is the ambassador here, so I have not had that conversation directly with him, but we have had those conversations with others in the Israeli government.
So my colleague Clarissa Ward spoke extensively with Israelis, ambassador, who are leading a movement to reestablish settlements in Gaza, Israeli settlements. And here is the so-called godmother of that movement discussing these plans.
The Arabs of Gaza lost the right to be in Gaza on the 7th of October. No Arab, I'm speaking about more than 2 million Arabs. Mm-hmm. They will not stay there. We, Jews, will be in Gaza.
Ambassador, do you condemn that?
In our resolution, we clearly condemn the new settlements in both in the West Bank and as well in Gaza. We've had, again, those same discussions with the Israeli government, encouraging them and urging them that no new settlements should move forward.
Ambassador, Israel has been relying on an AI system that it calls Gospel to identify attack targets in Gaza. They have not been transparent about how it works, but by their own account, the IDF has hit tens of thousands of targets inside Gaza since the war began. And just today, you led and the UN passed a resolution on AI. If this resolution were in place months ago, would it have saved civilian lives in Gaza?
Now, look, the resolution that we put forward today that the U.S. led more than 123 countries as co-sponsors on is a resolution about the peaceful use of AI. It's about how AI can provide for the needs of ordinary people, how we bridge the digital gap between less developed countries and more developed countries. There are other forums where military use for AI is being discussed and being dealt with. But this resolution did not deal with those issues.
So I'm curious, you know, during his annual news conference, Vladimir Putin was confronted by an AI-generated version of himself. It was just an odd juxtaposition. I mean, they were putting it front and center that they could do this, right? So the AI version of Putin asks Putin whether Putin uses body doubles. And Putin then said, whoever controls AI will be the, quote, ruler of the world. That's what he said. He's made no secret that he wants that to be Russia. Do you believe Ambassador Russia is outpacing the U.S. on AI development right now or not?
Look, we're working on AI. The private sector, the business sector is moving forward very, very quickly on AI. And this is why we felt this resolution that we put forward was so important, that it lays a foundation for how AI will operate, how AI will be used. And Russia was one of the countries that joined the consensus on this resolution. So we see this resolution as putting some barriers in place, some walls around how AI can be used. What Putin said in a press statement, I didn't hear that statement, but that doesn't impact the importance of this resolution that the U.S. was front and center in bringing before the General Assembly.
All right. Well, Ambassador, I appreciate your time as always, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
And out front next, Biden mocking Trump over his huge cash advantage over him. And it's not just Trump himself. The RNC tonight, are you ready for this, is so strapped for cash that Nikki Haley, who is no longer running, has more money in the bank. And we are going to give you all these numbers next. Plus chaos at the southern border, more than 100 migrants pushing back razor wire. What exactly led to this horrific scene on the U.S. border? We'll take you there live. Tonight, an emboldened President Biden taking on Donald Trump in a new ad.
And then I see the disinfectant. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside? We're doing, I think, really, really well.
I'll tell you what.
How? 1,000 Americans are dying a day.
They are dying. That's true. And you it is what it is.
Well, the president has money to figuratively burn. I mean, he has raised double the amount Trump did last month, and he is using that money to attack Trump in ad after ad. In fact, using it to openly mock Trump's money issues. At a fundraising event last night, Biden jokingly saying Trump had asked him for money. And the president told, obviously, a receptive crowd, Donald, I'm sorry, I can't help you. Today, sending out a press release titled, Broke Don Hides in Basement. Everybody understands the reference there to the basement. Okay, Harry Enten's out front to go beyond the numbers. So that the way, you know, we're presenting this, they've got some swagger in their step on this. Mm-hmm. The Democratic National Committee, though, if we just take a step back, what you're looking at is raising money. The RNC is struggling. What's the context on amounts?
Yeah, you know, here's the situation, right? We've been talking about the presidential race, but it turns out there's more than just a presidential race on the ballot come November, right? We're talking about fight for the Senate, fight for the House, fight for state houses. And a strong national committee is very important to build up those state parties and actually win something beyond the presidency. Take a look at how much the DNC has raised versus the RNC. Look at this right now in 2024. More than double the DNC has raised than the RNC, $26.5 million. Compare that to the last time that there was an incumbent Democrat running for re-election. The RNC actually outraised the DNC. So this is something that has been cooking this year with Donald Trump having real issues with the RNC under its previous leadership, and it is very much hurting the Republican National Committee's ability to raise money.
2.4 times, just by the numbers you said, in terms of what they're raising. Okay, so, but, you know, Trump should be able to mobilize money in a situation like this, running against an incumbent. I know he is, in some senses, also an incumbent.
Sort of,
but,
yes.
Okay, but he should be very successfully able to do this. But that does not appear to be happening. You're seeing it everywhere.
You're seeing it everywhere. And I mean, take a look at the RNC over the last few cycles in which there was, in fact, not an incumbent Republican running for re-election. And look this. This is the lowest total this century. And it's not particularly close, right? It's less than the 15.2 million in 2016. It is less than half the number again in 2012 and less than half the number in 2008. And if you include the incumbent GOP years as well, it's still the lowest number on record. And of course, as you know, we've had a lot of inflation. So if you took that into account, it would be even lower.
I was just about to say, I mean, it's that you're talking about 11 point. These numbers aren't even inflation. I mean, it's a stunning plunge. It is a stunning plunge. There's no other way to look at it. You've got Nikki Haley is not running anymore.
No, she's not.
Okay. Still in many states, even not running, getting 20% of the GOP primary vote. But she also has more money than the RNC.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you want an embarrassing figure to put this all into context, the fact that Nikki Haley, who basically won, Vermont and Washington, D.C., has more cash on hand than the Republican National Committee at the end of February, tells you everything that you need to know about the RNC's weak state. And more than that, I think it might also tell you a little bit that it didn't really matter how much Nikki Haley would spend in that campaign. She wasn't going to win it.
Right. And I guess maybe you could say, well, that could make the argument for how much does money matter. But one thing we know historically in politics is that when it comes down to it in the general election, it does matter. And we'll see. We'll see if that's the case.
We will see.
All right, Harry, thank you. And I want to go now to the Republican Congressman Ken Buck. He is leaving Congress tomorrow. A bittersweet night for you, Congressman. I'm glad to have you with us and that you're choosing to spend just a few minutes of it with me. You know, part of why you're leaving is what's happening, I know, within the Republican Party. You see these numbers that Harry broke down. You know them well. The numbers are worse than they have been in more than 15 years when you look at this for the RNC. What does this mean, Congressman, for the Republican Party?
Well, I think you've got to look at a lot of different numbers. One, Donald Trump is leading in the polls in a lot of the swing states. Two, Donald Trump was behind Hillary Clinton significantly in fundraising in 2016. But these numbers are not good. It is clear that the Republican Party needs to gather steam. One of the differences, I think, was that we had six or seven or eight at one point primary candidates who were siphoning off money from the RNC's efforts and from President Trump's efforts. So I think you'll see a rebound in President Trump's numbers, but they still are very far behind.
Yeah, certainly are. And I know some of those, Nikki Haley, some of her biggest donors actually have now said they're actually going to be donating to Biden. I mean, there is a schism in your party. And in part because of how they perceive Donald Trump within your party and also how they're handling President Biden. You, Congressman Buck, have been critical of your party's rush to impeach Democrats, right? I'm talking about plural, right? Mayorkas, Biden, more than one. There was that oversight committee yesterday in the Biden impeachment hearing. At that time, I mean, they had somebody testifying from prison. There wasn't a smoking gun, and they don't have the votes to go through with it. They simply don't. Your colleague, Tim Burchett, said as much. He was very blunt. He said, we're not going to have the votes. And I don't think we ever did. All right. That's an honest assessment by Congressman Burchett. Is it time, do you think, to end this?
Well, I think the investigation is warranted in terms of looking at what Hunter Biden did. I think that we may want to look at laws that restrict the family members of the president and vice president in terms of outside influences. But yes, I think for the part, this investigation has run its course. It may go for another 4, 6, 8 weeks. But for the most part, I think that the evidence has been uncovered. And the damage has really been done. And the American people need to assess exactly what kind of influence was there. But we need to move on. We need to do a much better job of spending bills. We need to do a much better job of funding Ukraine, for example. There are a lot of major issues that we should be looking at. This is a sideshow, and it should probably end in the next few weeks.
And, you know, when you say it's a sideshow and you're talking about important things, Ukraine, you're talking about avoiding another government shutdown. These are things that matter deeply, existentially to this country. And your focus on them, frankly, is at odds with some of your Republican colleagues. And some of them want you to pay a price for it. I mean, you know, if I was looking at things today, I don't even want to play them all. But, you know, they say you play party politics. They say that you're not upholding the Constitution. And then they've come out just before you are leaving Congress and said they're going to kick you out of the Freedom Caucus just days before your exit. They're going to kick you out. Done, obviously, just, you know, petulantly to make a point. I have to ask you, Congressman, and I'm sure tonight is a night that you're reflecting on this. What is going to happen to your party with more and more people like you who are willing to say that important substantive things matter are leaving Congress?
Yeah, I don't think it's good. Obviously, the number of people that's leaving has always been scrutinized. I think now you have to look at the quality of people who are leaving, who are frustrated, who can't feel like they're getting things done. And that's an important number also. My friend Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin, what a young, bright, hardworking person who reaches across the aisle, gets great work done, leaving Congress. Those are the people I think that we need to keep in Congress. We need to deal with the important issues, as you've mentioned, the spending, the situation in Ukraine, the border. We need to reach across the aisle. We need to find compromise. We need to move forward. You don't do that with people who are just throwing bombs.
No, you don't. And it is unfortunate, of course, that tonight is your last night. I know we'll be speaking again soon, but thank you so much, Congressman Buck.
Thank you, Aaron.
And next, we do want to show you this video. And we'll give you every bit of it we can in the context. This is migrants on the southern border overpowering American National Guard troops pushing through razor wire. It's terrifying. It looks like it's somewhere else in the world. So what caused it? What is happening here on the southern border? We'll go live to the scene next.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.